You're listening to episode 8 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Isabel disembarks and greets her friends with sighs of relief. However, the tension is renewed when Jonathan has another vision. On the way back to the Seekers Clubhouse, Isabel makes a startling connection. Just who is the hangman, and could he be related to Cog? Find out on The Gearheart. A small motorcade pulled onto a gravel road, then finally came to a stop a few miles later at an unassuming old farmhouse. It had been a while since Jonathan last stayed in the clubhouse on the edge of town, but now it looked like it would be his base of operation. It was standard operating procedure for the Seekers to remain close together during mission planning, but the situation always felt something like the camps Jonathan used to attend as a boy. The setup was nice, however, because Jonathan could be in close proximity to his friends, regardless of the circumstances. The downside was that the house was far less comfortable than a tent, and more likely to burn catastrophically in the event of a fire. The outside of the farmhouse was exactly as Jonathan remembered. Peeling paint, cracked yet unbroken windows, water-damaged boards bowing up from the porch, and a landscape painted with weeds. Ironically, there was a shiny new tin roof over the whole place, though Jonathan imagined that it was there to protect Keegan's precious library inside from the rain. Jonathan had once remarked that the whole place looked like a termite trap, though Keegan had been quick to respond that Seeker headquarters had special means of dealing with vermin. Jonathan felt it better not to ask what sorts of poisonous spells ran through the place. Jonathan and Isabel were first to the door, followed shortly by Augustus, Darren, and Keegan. As they tromped up the porch planks, Jonathan pulled out a brass skeleton key. Jamming the shank into the keyhole, Jonathan turned the bit, waiting for the release of the lock. He heard no such sound and jiggled the key, turning it until his numb fingers hurt.
"Stop it, Jonathan, that's no way to treat a piece of technology," said Augustus, rushing forward.
"Oh, come on, I'd hardly call any item in this house technology," Jonathan replied, trying to force the lock.
"Well, you would absolutely be wrong."
Augustus shooed Jonathan away from the door and gingerly placed his fingers around the key.
"Any machine'll serve you better if you just give it a little love."
With a melodic click, the bolt fell back into the socket, striking a small steel chime hidden in the housing. The door swung open ever so slightly, revealing the foyer beyond. As the chime's ring died into a hum, lamps of cold blue fire ignited along the ceiling.
"Cog?"
called Jonathan, stepping through after politely motioning Isabel inside. The foyer was stacked high with leather-bound tomes, creating a sort of claustrophobic cage for all who passed through. The air inside was cold, but slightly more comfortable than the breezy fields surrounding the building. The trade-off was that, with no real circulation, choking dust hung in the stale air and invaded Jonathan's fragile airways. He was no more than one step through the door before he was overcome with sneezing.
"Why can't we get a heater in here again?" Jonathan sniffled. "I forgot, you've never lived in here in the winter, have you?"
asked Augustus, a condescending smile crossing his face. The cold crept into Jonathan's body in a way that only static air could deliver. He shivered briefly in response.
"It was pretty nice, you know, last spring, with all the windows open."
"Heaters might cause a fire," Keegan sighed. "Just bundle up."
Right.
Darren strode inside without a single complaint and made his way to the back with Isabel's luggage. Jonathan heard him call for Cog once or twice as he marched up the creaky stairs. Then Keegan followed shortly behind. Isabel shuddered and scooted in close to Jonathan. Jonathan waited until they were out of earshot, then turned to the snowy-haired gentleman. "So, can I sleep in your lap, Gus?"
"Jonathan!"
Isabel snapped.
"That is completely inappropriate."
"Why? I thought he might have floor space." The lab had a heater and a vent system. It was easily the most comfortable room in the house, winter or summer. "Absolutely not. I have experiments going right now," Augustus replied. For such a young man, he certainly managed to look old. Jonathan frowned. "Well, how long are they going to be brewing?" "Okay, first of all, I'm not a witch. I don't brew things." "Oh, okay. How long are you going to be sciencing in there, then?"
"For at least another 6 months, Jonathan," Augustus spat. "And you know what? In the meantime, I'm going to start more experiments. The place is in use, friend, so get used to it."
With that, Augustus steamed off toward the back of the house. Jonathan heard a door open and slam in the kitchen, and was reasonably sure that Augustus was headed below ground. Isabel's nose wrinkled as the motors for the elevator hummed to life in the back room.
"What's wrong with witches?"
she asked.
"Oh, he just gets touchy when you threaten to destroy the past half year of his life's work just because you want a comfortable place to sleep,"
came Cog's gentle voice. Jonathan heard Cog's heavy footfalls upon the stairs long before he saw her. Her steel-toed leather boots came into view first, followed by her dirty, khaki slacks. Her slender torso was well hidden by a grease-stained, green plaid work shirt. A salutatory smile adorned her pale face, which caused the painted blush circles on her cheeks to become far more prominent.
"Welcome back, Isabel."
There was always something in Cog's tone that indicated a strong level of formality.
"Hey, Cog."
"Hey!"
Jonathan took a few more steps into the house and peered around the corner at the dusty furniture. "Any news?" The living room of the house was more cluttered than the foyer, only by virtue of its more spacious nature. Books were stacked high to the walls, following all of the floor runners and reaching a crescendo upon the hearth of the room's massive fireplace. To Jonathan, the fireplace looked like a gaping maw, though it could fill the whole house with a brilliant warmth. As it stood, the construction was merely an inlet for the frosty air that seeped through the closed flume.
"None at all."
Cog took Isabel's hand by the fingers and bowed her head ever so slightly, a traditional sign of Caldavi nobility.
"I rang your Uncle Milton, Jonathan, and let him know that you wouldn't be back any time soon."
"Does he know why?" said Jonathan.
"I'm afraid he guessed. He's none too pleased, considering the last time you ran off."
"I came back alive, didn't I?"
"I brought that to his attention, but he didn't seem reassured. When I told him our mission involved assisting Miss Carriker, he seemed more accepting."
Cog continued.
"Before I left the townhouse, I fetched some bed warmers and extra blankets for you and Isabel."
"Since she knew you'd forget,"
Isabel added. "Thanks, I figured that much out." Isabel slipped off her wool gloves and stuffed them into her pockets.
"I'd feel bad, though, if Keegan and the others didn't have them."
"Oh, Keegan has one,"
Cog corrected.
"Darren says he doesn't need one, I assume for magical reasons, and I'm told Augustus sleeps in the lab."
Isabel suppressed a giggle, and Jonathan's hands curled into fists.
"That snake!"
"Jonathan,"
Cog soothed.
"I'm certain that some of his experiments require constant supervision. Many of the apparatuses that my father used to fabricate required real attentiveness."
"Right. I'm so certain." Isabel's eyes were bright as she watched Jonathan launch into a tirade about Augustus, honesty, and morale. It was the first time in days that she hadn't thought about the incident at the academy. For once, her mind was blissfully empty.
"You should take care not to insult another man's honor without good cause,"
Cog snapped.
"That killed a lot of good men in my time."
"They don't really have dueling anymore, Cog."
"You think that will stop one man from seeking satisfaction from another?"
Jonathan's lips puckered as he thought out his next words. Finally, his hands went back into his pockets. "True, besides, we have heat for ourselves, so that's all that matters."
"So, the great bidding war is off then?"
asked Isabel.
"I'm afraid so, my dear. Alternative resources have averted the territory dispute," Jonathan replied in a stuffy accent.
"Aw, that's too bad. I wanted to see what you would come up with."
"I wouldn't have permitted Jonathan to square off in a battle of wits against Augustus,"
Cog stated with a flat expression, passing a wink to Isabel with her pink irises. the irises that she shared with the hangman.
Oh, and what's that supposed to mean, traitor? Jonathan cackled.
Cog,
Isabel uttered, her voice devoid of the mirth that had infected Jonathan. She sank down into a nearby chair, never taking her eyes off the pale woman's face.
And what makes you so sure you give me orders anyway?
Jonathan laughed.
Cog,
Isabel spoke again, stopping Jonathan's speech.
Hmm?
Isabel forced a smile, trying to diffuse her embarrassment and conceal pressing curiosity.
I've never asked you this before, but why are your eyes pink?
The tall woman's joyful expression faded slightly.
My father liked carnations. He said he wanted to be reminded of fields of blossoms when he looked at my face.
Cog cocked her head slightly, affixing her gaze upon Isabel's own.
Why do you ask? So you're the only one of your kind, then? Yes, of course.
Cog mused.
I believe so, anyway.
I'm afraid you won't find this report favorable, Keegan stated to Augustus and Darren as Isabel pulled up a chair in the lab. Augustus's underground lab was filled with dozens of crystalline beakers, burbling with unknown polychromatic substances. These glass eggs were planted in a nest of hundreds of feet of copper wire which ran to and fro from stills to vacuum chambers and other even more inscrutable places. On a workbench in pieces was a disassembled projectile weapon that Isabel immediately recognized as the elemental cannon from Augustus's custom biplane, the Avenger. She had seen him field the weapon once before, against the Antonellos 2 years earlier, and again against the mobsters at the docks. Keegan, Darren, and Augustus were already seated at a table in the center of the lab when Isabel had come into the room. It was a normal debriefing, but Isabel was unusually uncomfortable with the setup.
"Go ahead, Isabel," said Keegan.
Isabel cleared her throat and shuffled her feet. It felt odd to sit down, so she simply stood.
Upton Houseman, the military liaison between the Seekers and the Empire of Gelset, is a Seeker himself.
That's a fairly serious conflict of interest, said Darren. Do you think that the Seekers knew in advance that he would go to the Empire before he left?
I believe that was his intended place, actually. Houseman had an officiate's ring,
said Isabel.
I can't conceive of anyone so well placed in the organization defecting to a government.
Keegan folded his fingers and leaned forward onto the table.
Several files, including Houseman's, were released to my eyes recently. I haven't received them yet, but I'm already fairly certain about what they'll say about the late Lord Officiate.
He was there to stop losses, said Augustus.
The rate of defection to the Empire was rather high in the last 10 years, Keegan sighed. It is conceivable that it was Houseman's job to cut off agents before they could sell their knowledge to governments. As a military liaison, he was ideally placed for that sort of thing.
Isabel frowned, but she finally found the air and the conversation she needed to sit down.
I think that's a bit dramatic, Headmaster.
I also do find that sort of hard to believe, Augustus assented.
Keegan gave them a pained smirk.
Look, I know that both of you have been with the Seekers since you were children, but you're both fairly young and idealistic. There are simply things they don't tell the fledgling agents.
Such as things that would make them defect, Darren added. They've spent a pretty good amount of money on both of you, and it would be terrible if you ended up leaving.
Augustus and Isabel exchanged awkward glances.
The Seekers aren't criminals and murderers, but we also aren't playing games, Keegan assuaged. You can leave, but there is a protocol. We can't have you hemorrhaging information to the Northlands, Gelsets, and Caldavias of this world. You've seen how serious things can get.
For a moment, the group fell silent. Isabel's thoughts drifted back to Donovan Ashley and his gruesome death. They had all been there when it happened, even Jonathan and Cog.
Why aren't Jonathan and Cog here?
I'm sorry, Agent Carricker, but right now this is all very sensitive, Keegan answered. I don't want to involve them until I'm certain of the course that we want to take.
And as much as you trust them, Isabel, Darren began, Jonathan is an initiate, and Cog doesn't even really belong to the Seekers. It would be inappropriate to involve them in decision-making at this point.
I see,
said Isabel, looking to Augustus. Though Augustus was Isabel's peer in the organization, she could see that he didn't disagree with Darren's assessment. Without a leg to stand on, Isabel kept her opinions about protocol to herself.
Then let's get right down to it, shall we? Why was Upton killed?
You indicated to me that you thought the Magus who attacked him was predatory in nature, correct?
Keegan asked.
That's correct, sir,
Isabel replied.
Well, then I suppose he was hungry, so to speak, the headmaster opined. You said that he knew of the organization, and that he seemed to feed off magic.
Isabel was a little shocked to have her ideas confirmed, but the fact that Keegan agreed with her only solidified the terrifying reality of the situation. She never believed that someone would prey upon the Seekers.
That means the main chapter didn't find any record of him in their archives, doesn't it?
Augustus asked.
That's correct, Agent Ellsworth, Keegan replied. Given the current evidence, we can only guess that his motivation was some sort of sustenance or power. And given that, a better question comes to light. Why were you called out there, Agent Carica?
I didn't know him, so there was no personal motivation. He simply said that the Seers told him to do it,
said Isabel.
I don't think he knew it would kill him.
That's the unfortunate reality of many of her predictions.
The group once again fell silent, and the sounds of bubbling fluids and softly flickering burners filled the air. Augustus finally spoke up.
So what I want to know is, why did she tell him to call you out there?
I don't know,
Isabel replied. She could feel her face getting hot, and she was worried she would lose her composure in front of the others.
I don't think I really accomplished anything, and he died in the process. He told me that the Seeress said I would die if he wasn't there, but I only survived because the hangman wasn't hungry anymore.
It's all right, Isabel. We've already spoken about the details,
Keegan interjected before she could speak any more.
It seems fairly obvious to me why you were there, Isabel, said Darren, finally speaking up.
Oh?
She told the Lord Officiate everything he needed to hear so that he could die in front of you, Darren stated. She must have known.
Isabel simply didn't understand.
But why?
I can understand why you didn't see it before, Darren appeased, twisting his beard. You were too close to the situation, and as much as you wish they weren't, your emotions are involved.
Save the analysis of our agents for me, Agent Freeman,
Keegan warned,
and answer the question.
My apologies, sir, said Darren. What I mean to say is that the Seers wanted to show you just how dangerous the hangman was.
Darren looked about, seeing that they didn't quite follow him.
Knowing the dissemination of information amongst the Seekers, she wanted to make sure Isabel could relay everything to us about this hangman. She wanted us to be informed and on full alert.
You mean to say, Keegan began,
I mean to say that I think he's going to target one of our members soon. I would guess Jonathan McCaug, said Darren.
I understand you had a missive from the Seers yourself, Darren, said Keegan. What was that about?
Darren looked Keegan straight in the eye, unblinking.
She said that Isabel was in serious trouble, and that I needed to make all speed home, he lied.
What is Darren's dark secret, and can he believe the Seeress's prophecy? Does she really intend for the Seekers of Fumiston to fight the hangman? Is Cog the only one of her kind? Find out next time on The Gearheart.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Molly's Molotovs, stylish spirits for the lady revolutionary. Tired of playing with the boys' toys of whiskey, vodka, and moonshine? Come on down to Molly's Molotovs for the latest in incendiary fashions, such as our flaming Cosmo, a baby blue chenille rag plugged into a salmon pink Parisian bottle, garnished with a black satin bow. Perhaps the Destructini is more your speed, emitting a light scent of hot cocoa and potpourri as it incinerates your foes. Whatever your fancy, come to Molly's Molotovs. Just because you're having a revolution doesn't mean you can't have style. And by Buckingham's Beard Lamps, festoonery for the face. Are you blessed with that manliest of marks, the beard, but cursed with the lack of light? Do you want to be the envy of all the dim folks around you? Simply secure one of our Buckingham's Beard Lamps to your hirsute face and watch as the shadows disappear. Buckingham's beard lamps are made from strong, hand-shaped brass and burn any of a fine array of high-quality kerosene. So whether you've got a walrus or a Van Dyke, a duke's dog or a reverse Feldman, fire up a Buckingham's beard lamp.